This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the AIPIS show for accredited income property investment specialists and those who aspire to be. If you're a real estate, mortgage, or financial professional, this is the place for you. We'll explore innovative investment analysis, sales, marketing, and income-generating strategies for the most historically proven wealth creator, income property. Learn from the experts as they show you how to build a better business and a better life.
Welcome to the AIPIS show for accredited income property investment specialists and those who desire to be. This is your host, Jason Hartman, where we talk about increasing your income, your productivity, and just generally having a better life while serving your clients better with America's most historically proven asset class, income property. We have a great interview for you today, and we will be back with that in less than 60 seconds. Hey, it's my pleasure to welcome the real estate guys to the show, Russell Gray and Robert Helms. You probably know these guys. And we are at the IMN Residential. Well, this conference has a couple of names, actually. I've heard it called the Single Family Aggregation Conference. What a name. Or the Rental Investment Conference. They're here recording, so I just thought I'd love to get them on the show and talk about some predictions for the new year. Guys, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for having us, Jason.
Good.
My pleasure. My pleasure. So, you know, a big question has been asked over the years of, are we really in a recovery? Of course, the powers that be, the Obama administration, they want us to think we're in a recovery. I question that a lot, and I think you guys do too. What are your thoughts? Because we have to start with where we are in order to talk about the future, right?
Yeah, such a good point. Everybody wants to know what's going to happen in the future, and there is the law of expectancy, right? If I expect things to be pretty good, then guess what? I'm going to arrange my life in such a way that they're going to be pretty good. So, you know, in real estate, you can make money in an up market, in a down market, in a sideways market, but you've got to change your strategy and your thinking. When we layer on that the bigger economic picture, that's where it gets fuzzy, because a lot of the market and a lot of the data we get, let's face it, it's manipulated information. What we're hearing about, say, here at the conference yesterday morning, we heard about unemployment. Unemployment is down. Well, is it really?
Yeah.
How do they figure it? What numbers do they use? If they're only counting factual numbers, they're leaving out all kinds of people in the unemployment. So there's a lot fewer people with jobs today than there have been in the past.
Right.
And the kinds of jobs they have are very different. So that's great for real estate investors, because guess what we have more today? Tenants.
Yep.
More tenants than owners. Well, if I'm in the business of selling houses to owners, that's real estate, then I'm not as happy. If I'm in the business of long-term rental property that is going to create cash flow and appreciate over time in the right markets, then that's good news for me.
Yep.
Right? So where are we is always an interesting question.
Well, that was, you know, you led into exactly what I'm always talking about, how income property is a multidimensional asset class.
Yes.
And you can make money up, down, sideways, does not matter. You just need to adjust your strategy. So the two things that really hurt real estate investors is that they don't adjust. So, you know, you talk about, you know, we have this mass market of tenants, right? And that's great for rental incomes and upward pressure on rents and demand.
Yep.
But, you know, maybe overall the sales market isn't as robust as it otherwise would be if people had real corporate jobs that pay 70 grand a year versus, you know, they're like yoga teachers and bartenders, right?
Right. And those folks are hard to finance. So, right, the traditional, you know, real estate, single family real estate, like this conference is about, your borrower is a person who gets up, goes to work, earns the money, can qualify for a mortgage. Harder and harder to get mortgages. Well, I don't know if that's really true. It's been hard to get mortgage in the last few years. We're starting to see that change. We're starting to see players come back into the market who are looking through different lenses, recognizing that today's knowledge worker doesn't necessarily have a W-2 income and their assets may be different than folks in the past. So I think there is the light at that end of that tunnel.
Yep.
And the big picture, population is increasing. Housing stock is getting older. We need more units.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no question about it. And that's the other great thing about real estate is that, you know, there's just some hard issues there. Population increase and housing stock, which is hard to create. You know, it's not like creating a little widget and making it come off an assembly line. You've got land entitlement issues. You've got cities to deal with. You've got, you know, it's complicated, right?
Well, it is. And with technology, I mean, look at the very fact that today we're able to both have podcasts that are heard by people in different states and different countries is all about technology, right? Traditional radio, it didn't work like that.
Right.
Technology is changing a lot in the way real estate gets articulated, but here's what technology doesn't do. No technology is going to change the need for a human being to live under a roof.
Oh, no question about that.
So housing, and then, you know, single family housing at this conference, and of course, you know, you're obviously very involved with that, and multifamily housing, those are needs that are going to be here. I don't know about the latest app, if that's going to be a need I'm always going to have. How did I live before Facebook? What happens if Facebook changes? I don't know. But we know people are going to have to live somewhere, conduct business somewhere, vacation somewhere, right? Real needs.
That's one of the absolute beauties of our industry, is that it's just a hard need, and every human being on Earth has that in common. They need the three basic things: food, clothing, shelter, right?
Right.
Let them rent that shelter from you, investors.
There you go.
yeah, absolutely. Russell, you know, you were talking about one of the panelists that you were listening to yesterday. I think someone from one of the Federal Reserve branches, and they were talking about this employment, unemployment issue and the labor participation rate. Any thoughts or comments on that?
Well, I think big picture, you said, what state are we in? I think we're in a state of confusion, actually, because a lot of the data is, you know, manipulated. And you have people, as you mentioned, that have an agenda behind the data that they put out there. And you can say, well, oh, they have evil intent. I don't know. I'm not inside their heart and mind. I don't really know that. But what I do know is these are people who have their hands on the levers of major economic controls, and they are trying to move certain numbers. And sometimes I think they get it backwards, right? Yeah. Sometimes people go, oh, housing drives the economy. No, housing is a reflection of a healthy economy. You don't go buy a house and then get a job. You get a job and then you buy a house. And
good
so,
point.
You know, you say, well, if we could just move the housing number, that's like saying, okay, well, you know what? 98.6 degrees is a healthy human being. This body's dead. Let's put it in the oven and warm it up, and then we'll have it be alive. But it isn't
morbid,
alive. It's zombie economics is what I call it. So the guy was talking about the labor participation rate being low, which means there's less people in the population who are actually participating in being employed, right? That's what a low labor participation rate is, and it's the lowest it's been in four decades. And so they're blaming that on the baby boomers. And so that's completely inaccurate, because if you look underneath the labor participation rate and where the jobs are being created, the jobs are being created in the age 55 and over group. The baby boomers are actually having to come out of retirement because they're not getting a yield on their savings, and they're having to earn more money. And so it's the younger, the millennials, that are not getting the jobs.
Right.
And they're burdened with student debt. There's 40%+ of them living at home, you know, under age 30.
That is insane. But you know what that represents, Russ?
Pent-up demand.
Huge pent-up demand. I mean, because you know those kids do not want to live with their parents forever.
Right.
Now, I've heard Gen Y, you know, representatives in the news media talk about how, you know, we actually like our parents, this generation, right? Versus every other wanted to get away from home, right? So that's interesting, but they don't want to be living at home for.
Well, I mean, ultimately,
too long,
these kids, and I have a bunch of them, you know, and some of them have already gotten married. Others are going to.
How many do you have?
Six.
Oh, wow.
I've got six kids, and six kids and nine grandkids, and probably adding to that eventually. And we all get along, and it's great. And, you know, we have the boomerang kids, like a lot of people. They come and then they leave and then they come back. And, you know, it just depends on their life cycle. You know, we did a little bit of that as we were growing up. So, you know, you have families help each other, and that's kind of a normal, natural thing. But eventually, as a young person, you get to a season in life where you settle down. And at whatever point that happens, housing is going to be high on their priority ladder,
right?
Probably higher than anything else. And, you know, I got to believe that you are not going to keep the United States of America down for long. You know, even if we do have some economic distress, people figure it out, right? People always figure it out. Robert and I were, we call it petroleum transfer agents.
Yes.
Yes, we were petroleum transfer agents in one of our early jobs.
You pumped gas. I love it.
We were pumping gas in San Jose, California. We didn't know each other back then.
I can see you meeting your wives at the time, you know. So what do you do for a living? I'm a petroleum transfer agent.
That's
a big title.
That's right, petroleum transfer agent. But we watched gasoline back in the day when I was in high school go from, you know, 40 cents a gallon all the way up to 80, 90 cents. I remember when it crossed over a dollar. All that happened in high school. The dollar lost 50% of its value in the 70s.
Yeah.
Some people think, oh, that couldn't happen in the United States. It already has.
Right.
And other people think, well, if it happens, it's the end of the world. No, it's not. Yeah. It's not at all. So, you know, yes, things are changing. And you said this at the top of the show, the concept that, you know, sometimes real estate investors don't change. That's one of the big mistakes they make. I would agree with that. And I think by their nature, real estate investors are kind of mavericks. They're independent thinkers. They're nose to the grindstone, lost in the weeds, handling stuff on a daily basis. And what they miss are some of these big mega trends that are moving both economically, demographically, and even in some cases geographically. You're just busy with your nose to the grindstone. You don't realize that a market is changing. Dallas-Fort Worth, for example. For the longest time, Dallas-Fort Worth could just expand as far as the eye could see. You could add housing units as long as the day was long. Los Angeles used to be like that too. And at one point, it crossed. It crossed over, and one city ran into the next city, and pretty soon there was just a blur of construction. Dallas is moving down that path. And because of it, its housing market is changing. As those numbers begin to change, it becomes less of the market that it used to be that attracted so much attention. It used to be a great cash flow market. It is still a good market, but it isn't the great, strong cash flow market that it once was, right?
Yeah, because and the reason is that the rents have increased a little bit in Dallas, for example, and this is true in a lot of cities, of course. Phoenix is the same way, and we know all the markets that this is true in. But the prices go up always much faster than rents, and so rents always have to catch up. They always lag the price curve, and so that's why it doesn't have the cash flow it used to have. You know, you could buy that same house in Dallas a few years back for $80,000 that now you're going to pay $120,000 for. So, and $120,000 is kind of the entry level for a quality investment property in Dallas, you know, and then it goes up from there. Yeah, of course you can get C and D class anywhere and pay, a lot less, but good luck collecting
your
rent.
That very house that at $80,000 rented for $800 at $120,000 isn't renting for $1,200. Right. It's running for $900 or $950.
Exactly.
So harder to make the numbers work. And that's back to that strategy. You change as a real estate investor based on what the market gives you.
Right.
There were times when flipping property was a no-brainer because of the value of the market. You didn't have to do that much.
Right.
Today, you have to be strategic in that business. And,
sure.
And we're not in the flipping business, and you're not really in that business either, right? But there are folks that's what they do, right?
Yep.
So when we talk about real estate, there's so many different ways to play.
Oh, of course there are. Okay, so I want to ask you one more thing about where we are now, because you mentioned technology, and this is just begs that question. Then let's talk about where you think we're going, okay? Because everybody wants a prediction, so dust off your crystal ball and let us know. But when it comes to technology, there are some things going on in the real estate world. You know, we deal with a low-tech product, which is great because it can't be disrupted easily.
Right.
But I keep reading about and seeing videos online about 3D printed houses. Of course, you've seen this stuff too.
Yeah.
Now, the thing people have to realize is even though you can 3D print a house and barely anybody's doing it, there's like a couple of experimental cases. This is not an impact thing in the market, at least not yet.
Not yet.
Maybe it will be someday. But those 3D printed houses still use actual commodities and materials, okay? Even if the construction is a little bit easier and maybe you save labor costs, possibly making downward price pressure, right? They're still built from commodities, whether they be plastic or lumber or, they don't build 3D with lumber, but mostly petroleum-oriented products, right? And concrete-oriented products. So what do you think about that? Is there any disruption possible? I mean, I don't think there's any big disruption coming our way until we actually, live in a force field. Something really futuristic, okay?
Back when Russ and I were petroleum transfer agents, cars had carburetors.
Yeah.
And today they have fuel injectors.
Right.
So the technology is completely different.
Or they have electric motors.
Or electric motors. And in all those cases, the car still does what the car does. So houses will be built, and construction methodology will hopefully continue to improve.
Yep.
That's great for pricing. That's great for value.
And it might be better quality.
It might last longer.
Yeah. So maybe the thing there will be that, people don't pay less for the house. They just get a better house. Look, this iPhone is much better than the first phone I bought, which was $3,200, and I financed it.
Right.
Okay. So it's not like... it has to be a price thing. It might just be a better quality, better standard of living issue.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Plus, there's the technology overlay of, the smart house and the way that systems are changing within.
So thermostats
and all of that, which is great. All that's great for progress, and it's great for real estate investors. If I can have a more stable understanding of my expenses, they may not go down, but if they're more stable, if I know, depending on where you buy. If you buy in California, there's a very good chance that your roof will last through its entire life. If you buy in Texas, it's impossible for a roof to last 40 years because there's going to be a hailstorm sometime, right? So yeah. If you're near the ocean,
yeah.
Right, you have different maintenance. Okay. And so I think there's a lot of exciting things happening in technology for construction. But from the investor's standpoint, it's all good, yeah. Right? All right. That will do is increase our ability to rely on whatever the numbers are going to be.
I agree. And one thing that really struck me, by the way, and I don't want to get off on this tangent, but maybe another show, is how mature this industry is getting. Like being at this conference and hearing all, this is becoming a mature, less fragmented industry.
Oh, absolutely.
With these guys owning 3,000 homes, 1,700 homes, I've heard a lot of speakers, talk about 10,000 homes.
Right.
I mean, this is becoming a more mature, and I think yields will compress ultimately as it matures, like in any industry.
Well, right? there's your crystal ball. Yeah. We're already seeing it happening, yeah. Right? As soon as big money comes in, whether that are hedge funds or REITs or Wall Street, whoever's coming in to buy up a single family asset, right? Traditionally, this has been a mom and pop asset.
Yeah.
If you saw the...
And it still is.
And
I mean,
still
this is.
Is
a drop in the bucket when we talk about this, but the direction is that, clear.
And it's, right? By being at this event, it's clear that there is a change. There's a shift in who the buyer is.
Right.
And there's been that. We've seen that shift since, 2008 when the big companies came in and staffed up inventory. Today, I think, though, the groups that you're talking about who have 1,500 homes, 3,000 homes, 4,500 homes, they are more nimble. They're smarter. They've gotten the lesson.
And they're doing humble single-family homes.
They are. I mean, which, again, I think bodes well for all of us in the single-family home space, right?
Right. Well, it'll push prices up and make rental... It'll probably push rents up, too, because institutional investors really crank those rental yields. Just go to any nice institutional apartment complex, and man, they charge a lot.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so more crystal ball stuff. Anything?
I don't know about crystal ball stuff, but I mean, talking about the technology, I didn't really think when you first asked the question that much about technology from the standpoint of construction, although that was a good point. I look at it more in terms of the impact on marketing, on finding deals, on discovering bad markets sooner, good markets sooner. I think that the industry and the people in it are just a heck of a lot smarter.
Yeah, and the tools we have are so much better.
The tools, because the tools are there, because you have the data, and because you have access to the data, because you have access to a lot of people's opinions, and you can think faster, you can think through issues quicker, and you don't have to rely upon a conference, although conferences are great. You can listen to things like podcasts, radio shows, and you have access to all this information. And so it does make it harder if you are not keeping up. If you are not upgrading your education, if you're not paying attention to the data and thinking things through,
someone else is,
and you're going to, when someone realizes a market is turning, markets and Robert's due diligence class, he taught me that, markets go through these progressions. They start out and they go through a growth phase, and then they go through a stabilization phase, and then they go through a decline phase, and then eventually they go through a revitalization stage. And of course, we're as a country, we're fairly mature.
And that's what societies do too.
That's what societies do, exactly. Right. That's exactly what goes on. And so if you can recognize where you are at in the cycle, you know how to organize your portfolio and make your moves. And it goes back to the theme that kind of evolved out of this whole conversation about adapting to change. And so the information that we have available to us to be able to see the change coming, the people who respond quicker and either get out of the way of something bad or jump on the wave of something good are going to be doing better faster. And there will be a divergence between the people who are lazy and the people who are innovative, because the amount of time and effort it takes to get the information you need to make better decisions is no longer cost prohibitive. Right. It used to be only the big guys can do it.
The world is flattening. Everybody has access to Zillow. Everybody has access to Google Street View and Google Earth and all these great tools. The subtext, you didn't mention it, but I was hearing the subtext there of it's a great opportunity because now every investor can geo-arbitrage their investing. You don't have to think like this provincial local investor. One of the speakers, I'm sure you heard this panelist yesterday, who said that, it was like 80% of the single family homes owned by investors in the country are owned by people that live within 10 miles.
Right.
I may have not got those numbers exactly, but the theme was that still, mom and pop invest close to home, but the more sophisticated investor listening to things like our podcast, they get it that you don't have to be stuck. If you live in LA, which is completely overpriced, landlord unfriendly, I grew up there, I know what it's like, okay? You don't have to invest there anymore.
Right.
You've got tools now that allow you to be geographically free. And so you can geo-arbitrage pricing and rents and laws and regulatory environments. It's a beautiful thing.
Well, and the point is, through technology, you can discover those markets, you can build relationships, and you can go get connected in ways that were completely impossible before. If you think about it, you know, I used to watch the old show, and Jason, you're probably too young to remember this, Robert will remember this, called Big Valley.
I remember that.
Remember
show,
Big Valley?
But I never watched it. But
okay,
I,
so I used to watch
it
when I was a little
younger.
When I was a little kid, I used to watch Big Valley, and it was about this ranching family in Stockton. I believe they were in Stockton in Central California. It was
the foreclosure capital of the world.
Big deal when they needed to go to, you know, Sacramento, to the state capital.
Right.
It was a big deal, right? They'd load up the horses, they'd load up the provisions, and they would go, and it'd be a multi-week trek just to get to Sacramento.
Yeah.
That's an extreme example, but think how technology has changed people's ability to access other markets. Today, I mean, you know, I get dental work done in Tijuana, Mexico, and because it's cheaper and it's better quality.
How do your teeth look?
Can you get close to the radio? Can you see?
Yep.
My point is, I discovered that online, and I was able to get on an airplane.
You can arbitrage medical. I mean, medical tourism is a big deal.
That's another huge opportunity. But again, I get on the plane in the morning, I fly down to San Diego, I get out, I rent a car, I drive over the border, get my work done, and by that afternoon, I'm back home having dinner with my wife, right?
You couldn't do that before.
That's what technology has done, and it's done a lot for real estate investors. Of course, people who decide not to take advantage of it are stuck investing in their own backyard, right?
And their backyard may not be the right yard.
And
even if it is, they won't be diversified. Okay, so say they live in the best city in which to invest at that particular point in time.
Right.
They still won't be diversified. And, you know, I don't know what you guys say, but I say you got to be in three markets.
I think three is a great number, right? I think 21 is too many. Right? You want to be diversified because here's
one
the
of
thing.
The mistakes I freely admit that I made.
Yeah.
You know, the old intro to my show, I changed it. But it used to say, you know, own properties in 11 states and 17 cities, right? And that I over-diversified. So you can go
It's a great point because you wouldn't necessarily think that if you've got wide eyes as an investor going, I want to own a lot of places.
Eyes are bigger than your stomach, yeah.
Well, and how many relationships can you manage?
Yeah.
So I think three is a great number. Right. Four, right? Two.
Three to five, I say, but you know.
There's not been a market that has ever been the number one greatest single market for a long period of time. Markets shift. And yet, as long-term buy and hold investors, we get married to a market.
Right.
We're going to be in a market for 5, 10, 20 years.
Yeah. So hopefully 27.5.
Hopefully 27.5.
You guys know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So you make the adjustment market-wise, too.
Right.
You might today be in the perfect market to invest in, but that is going to change. So I think even if you're in a great market, look around.
Yeah. Absolutely. Very good points. Well, give out your website and any final thoughts. We got to wrap up. I got to be at lunch.
We're easy to find. We're at realestateguysradio.com. Still broadcasting on the radio after 19 years and podcasting like you do, Jason. And we're big fans of your show. We appreciate the time today and encourage your listeners to continue to put great ideas in their mind. And education is what always pays out the best returns.
Yeah, no question. And likewise, great thoughts. Any thoughts about predictions? Any final wrap up on that, though?
The market will either go up or down. Interest rates will either go up or down. The sun will come up and people will continue to need to live in houses. So there will always be opportunity.
And if you want to bet on something that's a sure thing, bet on yourself.
Yes.
There's nothing you should doubt except your own limits.
Right. Good points. Good points. Well, hey, guys, thanks for being on. It was great talking to you again.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Jason.
You know, sometimes I think of Jason Hartman as a walking encyclopedia on the subject of creating wealth.
Well, you're probably not far off from the truth, Penny, because Jason actually has a 3-book set on creating wealth that comes with 60 digital download audios.
Yes, Jason has that unique ability to make you understand investing the way it should be. It's a world where anything less than 26% annual return is disappointing.
I love how he actually shows us how we can be excited about these scary times and exploit the incredible opportunities this present economy has afforded us.
We can pick local markets untouched by the economic downturn, exploit packaged commodities investing, and achieve exceptional returns safely and securely.
I also like how he teaches you to protect the equity in your home before it disappears and how to outsource your debt obligations to the government.
And the entire set of advanced strategies for wealth creation is being offered at a savings of $94.
That's right. And to get your Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series, complete with over 60 hours of audio and 3 books, just go to jasonhartman.com/store.
If you want to be able to sit back, and collect checks every month, just like a banker, Jason's Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series is for you. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.